Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Tom, wine or beer?
Still beer, but as I approach my 40s, probably going to wine pretty soon, Kevin.
So you're moving down the spectrum of the beer-wine continuum. You're moving toward the wine. You're becoming a moderate on the question.
Yes, there are days where I want just a glass of wine, but so far, I am still team beer.
Okay.
What about you?
Yeah, I'm wine all the way. Tastes great, less filling. I mean, I will enjoy an IPA. I used to like the Hefeweizen, a little wedge of lemon, you know, kind of Seattle Portland style. But the calorie pleasure ratio has never been there for beer. If I'm going to ingest that many calories, I'm having a slice of pizza. Is Pack Your Knives. I'm Kevin Arnovitz.
And I'm Tom Haverstroh.
Tom, Final Four. Great Final Four, by the way. I mean, I think when we talked about doing this season, you know, it wasn't just that Tom Colicchio said this is sort of the pinnacle of Top Chef, at least their favorite season. But also, I think the foursome itself, like, it's not just production, it's not just the competition, like, those four chefs are just really fun chefs to watch. It is an appealing style of play to have these four folks in the finale.
Yeah, and just breaking down the numbers, it's pretty even. We have Jen in the finale, you know, part one, and she's kind of the quick fire queen. She's won four quick fires. She's only got one elimination challenge win, but she's been in the top three five times. She's got a whole bunch of quick fires. Kevin is probably the favorite going into Napa because he had four wins, seven top three finishes, only one loss, got four quick fires. So he's a little bit more versatile. And unlike Brian, who hasn't had a quick fire win, you know, Kevin does both. He wins elimination challenges and he wins quick fires. But Michael Voltaggio, you know, he's got nine top three finishes. He does have a one bottom three finish. And we hear from Brian Voltaggio at the end of this episode saying, you know, I've never been on the chopping block. essentially. He is right. He's never been in the bottom. He's never lost, obviously. And so when we go into this episode, we're talking about four people who have significantly outperformed the rest of the crew. So when you're assessing before the season, Tom Colicchio says there could have been eight people who could won this entire season. I don't think that's accurate. I think it was four. And maybe he was saying, you know, Mike Isabella, Eli, Ash, whoever it might be, were, you know, capable of winning, even if they didn't win an elimination challenge. But these four are like, they could be performing on Top Chef Masters. That's how good they are.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a really impressive group. You know, I'm saying, like, I don't know, you know, is Kevin the favorite? Because I don't know that we count quick fires in assessing favorites, just because it is such a standalone. Like, let's talk about the quick fire just in general. Forget season 6, forget season 17. Just, it's a really interesting vehicle, right? We feel as viewers that we're vested. We feel it's important. We want to know who wins. Yet, it's interesting in that it has no, its value to the overall standings, or if you will, or not even standings, you know, the competitiveness. I mean, who's going to win and who's going to lose this competition? I'm sure there's some correlation, obviously. If you are a good quick fire chef over time, you are much more likely to win. And the same goes if you're lost, but it's really about confidence. It's really about, I mean, these are essentially exhibitions, Tom. And yet we love Quickfire. I mean, it's a testament to the series itself that they can spend the first 20 minutes of an episode on something that has no impact on winning or losing. Yeah, they'll throw you some money once in a while, or you get a set of pots or pans, and that's not nothing. But it doesn't impact winning or losing when you review the season in terms of placement and win, place, and show.
Yeah, it's just in the early seasons, it's a way for lesser competitors to get some wins. You know, it's an opportunity for people to catch lightning in a bottle and get some, you know, immunity, or get, it's a nice little competition. You're right. It's more of an exhibition. I do think that there's some talent, a skill in doing quick fires that might not be, you know, you can be Brian Voltaggio and win the whole damn thing without winning a quick fire, because he's just a really good chef at like putting together a meal. Now, I do think Kevin deserves a lot of kudos for the ability to think quickly and to conceptualize a dish in 30 minutes. But on this particular one, he kind of the motion sickness got to him a little bit. Wasn't his
one
best
thing
performance.
I would like, right, just to go back real quick, one thing I would love our friends at Top Chef Stats that I would love to know, and I suspect you would like to know, whether we're talking about a top competitor, middle, or even a mediocre competitor, does a quick fire win correlate? Is there a bounce? Is there a quick fire bounce? Is an otherwise average contestant in the week or two following a quick fire win more likely to have their biggest success in elimination? In other words, that's something we always in the interviews hear contestants say, like, oh, it gives me confidence. It feels great to win a quick fire. You know, I can go forward now. And I'm just curious if there is truth to that. Is perception reality on that one? Does a quick fire win translate into, you know, success in the subsequent, let's say, 1 or 2 weeks after you do it?
Well, I think if you're looking
at Eli would be the best example, right? Like Eli won a quick fire in week 8 and then finished high in 9 and 10.
Yes. And obviously, if you are getting immunity, you're more likely to get wins in the subsequent rounds because you're still around, right? So it might be a little bit of that going on in there. If they do show that there is some value to winning quick fires, it might just be because that intrinsic lock it in immunity factor. But I do think that separate from that, there's probably a little bit of a high that you get, a little bit of confidence booster that allows you to feel more empowered to do certain dishes. That might be a false positive. That might be giving you empty confidence, which is probably not good either. So I think when we talk about Kevin Gillespie riding on a train, he probably knows this is, you know, kind of low stakes. Do I want a Prius? Maybe. But to me, his focus and all of the four contestants has to be on that meal that later that night.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, you know, to the previous point, right? Like at this point, it's not like winning or losing a quickfire is going to convince you that you're either all powerful or vulnerable, right? Like at this point in the competition, there's no immunity. You know, it's just really if you brick the quickfire, it ain't like it's you're going to have trouble in the elimination. It doesn't really say anything at this point. It's a convention of the show. We enjoy it. I mean, this wasn't my favorite quickfire. And it was funny that the mistakes were all predictable. One of the big Top Chef issues is always you didn't highlight the ingredient. You didn't highlight the ingredient as sort of reason number one in a sort of a quick fire. We want you to use whatever it is, right? I mean, the cactus, or I remember one. And so I feel like, you know, watching Brian Veltaggio look like a nice plate didn't highlight the ingredient.
No, but Kevin, I thought they said he didn't get enough grape in there, which is weird. Like Kevin, all I saw was grape, and yet they said it wasn't enough grape in there. And let me just say, that dish from Michael Veltaggio was like the perfect Top Chef quickfire dish.
Oh, it's fantastic!
Oh my god! Like how did he come up with that? I mean, it was inventive. It was an homage to, you know, grape leaves filled with rice, a domates Greek dish. And I was just like, the fact that he came up with that and executed in 30 minutes and it tasted good. What?
I love how you just said domates, like a little Greek. You're like one of those NPR anchors that like slips immediately
Barcelona.
Into. Yeah. Like when they're doing the thing, they just get it's standard Tom Brokaw English. And then they go like Maria Hinojosa. And you did the kind of the Greek version of that.
Yeah. And I looked at, I mean, when I saw him do that dish, I was like, see, that's what Mike Isabella should have been doing in previous episodes, was when he said he was doing a Greek dish, do the Greek dish. That was very much inspired by a Greek dish, and he actually executed it. I'm going to say for the entire episode, Kevin, I don't know about you, but I thought the food looked so good. Like the rest of the meal, we'll talk about in a bit, but all of these dishes they made, I don't know whether it was the Napa ingredients, but it looks so delicious, the dishes. And I don't know about you. I am not a grape connoisseur. So when I'm watching them decide between Cabernet grapes and Concord grapes, I don't really know what I'm dealing with here. Have you kind of gone down the whole like raw grape, not like in terms of wine, but have you dealt with – do you have like preferred grapes?
Yeah, I mean, the one grape that is just so delicious right now, actually, in the last couple months, so I'm very into these Kyoho grapes. It's like they're these massive purpley kind of grapes. Origin, I think, is sort of Japanese. They're a little bit Concordy in the sense that, you know, what I love is like when a natural grape tastes like Welch's grape juice. You know, like that's kind of what I'm going for. I want natural artificial grape flavor. Now that's not true of my wine or anything, but I'm saying it just the grape. And I mean, the only thing is they have this like a shit ton of seeds. But it is like the Kyoho grape is just, it's my favorite. And they're also expensive. Like they give you this little plastic box and it's like, that'll be $12. And it's like, I mean, that's a lot for grapes. But yeah, the Kyoho grape is my personal favorite.
Yeah. So I'm not very esteemed in my grape knowledge, but I will say all of these dishes looked really good. And I was surprised that Kevin had a ding for his honey and fromage dessert, because I was like, that actually looks like it's full of grapes. And then Brian does the roasted hen with Brussels sprouts and the reduction of the Concord grape. And I guess the bacon overpowered it, but that's a dish I would eat in a half a second. And then Jen does the chicken livers with clams, and you know, that was a classic Jen dish. Is I think Mike Chiarello said, I want that on my menu, and she's like, yeah, go for it. Yeah,
I really thought she was gonna win for that. I mean, I will say the one thing that Kevin might have done is some of those, like some of those yellow grapes sometimes just get, they're just not that strong, and it's just not grapey, you know, it's like, I guess nice, that's texture, yeah, or whatever, and that's, yeah, probably I think where he went wrong.
And I guess that's where Kevin should have tasted the grapes before he chose them. Like, I almost feel like that you can't blame Kevin for that. But then if you have an assortment of eight and you choose the one that doesn't have any flavor, that's on you. So that's right. And what I loved about this is Michael Voltaggio, when they announced that the Prius car was coming through, I could almost see Michael Voltaggio's face being like, really? I don't really know if I want to drive a Prius.
Like, I didn't notice that, but it totally makes sense now that you mention it.
Yeah, he was like, oh, what's it? Is it $35,000? Is it a trip to Napa? It's a 2010 Prius. And you see like they pan to the reactions, and Michael Voltaggio is just like, like nodding his head, like not like on this isn't Price is Right when they wheel out the yacht, right? And so, of course, who wins the quickfire? Michael Voltaggio.
Right. It's almost like it is the Price is Right where you get like the appliance set that, you know, it's always like the first showcase, you know, the shitty showcase.
Oh, I get a dishwasher, you know, and a dryer. Great. Yeah. All right. And the next person gets like a Corvette.
A new car. Yeah, exactly. But so that, yeah, I mean, I like that we're in Napa. I love those sort of California farmers markets. They were clearly so excited for the produce. And this is where I'm a total California chauvinist. Like, it is just the best thing about living here is just the weekly farmers markets. And also they just have everything, you know.
Yeah.
There's always my frustration. I mean, Atlanta is, you know, it's warm weather. It's pretty moderate. You can get some good stuff, but it's like when I go home and I want to like cook, it's like I can never find what I want. Like, where's the delicata squash? I don't know. Those look like tennis, like elongated tennis balls. They're not heavy. They're, you know, I never get what I want. And it's just one of those nice things about living here, even though I love other places. It's just that produce is awesome.
Yeah. And the elimination challenge was, you know, everything that they put on a plate, it was so beautiful. It was just all the colors were popping. And I'm so jealous of you, Kevin, out there.
Yeah, it is really nice. So like the elimination, we're starting to get to that point where they give them a very wide berth. Mm-hmm. There are not a lot of rules. Okay, go get locally sourced foods. And by the way, we're only offering you locally sourced. I mean, it is almost a preamble to the final where you just get to kind of roll out your food without a lot of limitations. And, you know, and I always find that fun. I mean, I do think there are – I think an elimination challenge with a couple of – restraints can be fun, you know, watching them struggle over coals in the snow. Like, I mean, that works a little bit, or do vegetarian, but I do love kind of, hey, it's freestyle. Just go. Because I just think you get the best expressions of them, which is kind of what I want.
Yeah. And in this particular one, they made them do a vegetable dish for 150 people and then a local protein dish. Kevin, like the vegetable dishes they produced, they all look so good. I'm asking you now because I know in your head you were just beside yourself probably watching them make this dish, but the Voltaggio brother, so which one would you rather have? The egg dish with the raw egg that he put in with that pea stew, or the Brian Voltaggio's goat cheese ravioli with shiitake on top?
I mean, so like my heart wants the ravioli, but, you know, what I'll take, you know, I do love an egg in anything. I mean, it was a really interesting dish. I mean, I would say there is nothing better than like kind of sweet squash inside a goat like a goat cheese ravioli. I mean, that is kind of what I want. It's, you know, again, if calories aren't counting, I mean, I'm just one of those guys who like, I will do pasta there. When I go to a couple different places, I'm doing a pasta. Like, we have this, you know, we have a local place that we like. If I go down to Bestia, I'm doing that. But, I generally will go, I probably would order Michael's more times out of 10, but I will mm-hmm. enjoy Brian's more, or be more, I'll find it more alluring.
Yeah, because I was like, ooh, egg forward dishes here. I bet Kevin's excited about this. Because I looked at that Michael Voltaggio's dish and I just said, oh, that looks awesome. And, you know, when you have the pea stew with the tomato soup, with the egg in it, I Maybe there's a texture issue there that Padma kind of mentioned, is that there's a little bit of the undercooked egg white surrounding the egg yolk. And that probably is a little off-putting, but I thought that was
It is off-putting. And I say this as someone who loves my scrambled eggs underdone. I have wet eggs. But to me, like I'm always like when I don't nail a good sort of fried egg, it's when you have that little slime of egg white kind of still on top, and it just kind of screws up an egg dish. Like even if you get the nice runny golden egg, you're still dealing with this. It's basically just dilutes the entire thing. Mm-hmm. And so I imagine that might've been a problem though. I do love like a good tomato soup. I mean, I just still one of the more kind of just homey dishes that are out there. I do love a tomato soup.
What'd you think about the foie gras terrine with the turnip thing?
Turnip looks like a pear looks like a turnip.
What do you think?
Who doesn't love foie gras terrine? that is low hanging fruit for me. That is what we love. We order that. If it's on the menu, there is 100% chance that is going to be a starter for us.
If there's like chanterelles or shiitake mushrooms or any sort of mushrooms on a menu, I'm almost 100% going for it. I wonder, there's this thing in fantasy football or fantasy baseball where there's an MVP. They look through, I don't know if you're aware of this, they look through all the winning teams in fantasy football that year and which player is the most common amongst those winning teams. So it's almost like the MVP of fantasy is someone who picked up off a waiver wire and became one of the best players in the league, right? And I'd imagine if you did a what's the MVP of a menu in terms of you and I going out to 100 restaurants, what is the common denominator on the dishes we order? Is like a foie gras terrine like number one on that list? Or what ingredient do you think is the most common thing that is included in a Kevin Arnovitz order?
You know, you and I match up very well, right? Because foie gras, so I'm living with someone who's not a mushroom guy. So I've had to just sort of not abandon it, but it's just not something I'm going to get. Whereas I always gravitate to the mushroom starter. I love earthy mushrooms. I'm still a guy who loves a crudo, as I know you do. In the starter of a, you know, the restaurants we go to, like I'm generally going to get the crudo. We'll generally avoid the carby option unless it is foie gras over some, you know, so a brioche or something. Like we'll tolerate that. I also live with someone who doesn't like soup. Doesn't like wet food. So that tends to be off the table.
Doesn't like wet food as like a description. He doesn't like wet food. Trait of a dish. Anything wet, he's just out.
No, like dips in soups.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You know, yeah. Otherwise a great eater. I mean, there's not. Back in the day, you know, I do like a good like charcuterie, but now I don't eat mammals right now. I might come back to it. I'm just going through this phase. And finally, though, back in the day, beef tartare with an egg yolk and yeah. You know, that's we are going to get that is all, but I think you and me and then, you know, Eric too.
Yeah I mean, looking at all these dishes, Kevin, like these are some of my greatest hits. I love a good brisket. I love a good short rib. I love some foie gras. Duck legs, give it to me. Like all of this, Kevin, this whole entire elimination challenge, I was salivating, dripping out of my mouth. I was so hungry after watching this episode. Everything looked so good. And I'm wondering, what was the thing that jumped off to you the most of all of these dishes? Which one were you like, oh yeah, that I'm ordering right now?
Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass-on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, little, hey, boy, how you doing? And Noodle's just like,
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for your eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise, but maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
I mean, again, if I'm putting aside my current restriction, I've got to say, I agreed. I think, like, a fig glazed short rib, if it is tender, is just perfect. And again, I'm not doing it right now, but I like sort of bright beans. I like favas and wax beans if done correctly. I think there's a great disparity. Like, I think really good beans done well are wonderful. And I think, like, crappy beans are not done well are just joyless. But I thought his dish looked the best and apparently tasted the best. But they were all excellent.
Excellent. This was classic Top Chef, where I really think like a minor detail is going to send someone home. And as I'm watching, I'm just saying, you know, I don't know who's going home. I don't. Like, it very rarely does a chef go home for having something that's too salty. I always think that it's a lack of seasoning, and Tom Colicchio right. had mentioned many times in this episode, either, you know, didn't have enough salt or didn't have enough pepper. Like, it was very classic Tom Colicchio. But I think going into this elimination with Jen's chef mousse with mushrooms, she had the duck legs with foie gras. I'm just sitting here like, all of these dishes – the crowd seems to love each of them.
If you know I had what? I am switching with duck leg and foie gras. I mean, I don't know how I am. I mean, you know what's funny? I eat it so much now that it sort of is demystified. But I think I'm going to switch right now. I didn't say I forgot about it, but I forgot how good it was and just the components there.
Yeah. Oh man, so good. So, yeah, so they go to the elimination, to the judges' table. All of them come out. And at this point, I think I'm thinking Michael Voltaggio's winning. I know that
they
I know that they dinged him for the weird texture on the egg, but I just thought he was rolling from the quick fire. He just seemed like he was in his element. The crowd was basically worshiping him. I thought that was I thought it was going to be Michaels.
I did too, and I actually also thought Kevin might go home for ropiness. Because I do think there is a did you nail the protein quality to this show, and we've always talked about it. I mean, did you nail the protein is still, especially when you get to the later rounds and there aren't that many technical errors and there aren't that many bombs, it is still a very, very important thing. I really thought the ropiness would send him home. And I really am surprised. I mean, the one thing is, I'm actually shocked that he did it just because you just need time. You know you're going to run into problems. You can sell it as, oh, the toothiness or whatever he called it. Whereas, you know, I think one of the impressive things about Brian Voltaggio was, I'm just going to take it off the bone. Like, I know the bone has added value. I mean, there's something really succulent when the bone is sort of part of the braise because it releases even more. But he, you know, Brian Voltaggio made a very mature decision. He's like, look, whatever value I lose on not having the bone, I'm going to make it up because I just kind of reduced my clock. And I thought that was just really smart. In some ways, I'm sort of glad he won based on that decision, which I just thought was crafty. I do want to do a braised meat. I don't have time to do exactly what I want. Let's make lemonade and get rid of the bone.
Let me ask you a question, Kevin. If a dish is presented to you on a menu and then they say, you can have this meat with the bone, what dollar amount are you adding to that with bone dish as opposed to just a naked meat there? I gain a lot of satisfaction from having the bone on my plate. What about you?
I do too. And, ribeye would be the most common here. I mean, here's my only problem. Like, I want to pick it up and gnaw.
Yeah.
And I do think there's still a stigma at a certain kind of restaurant where if you start going brontosaurus, people look at you funny, right? Like, I just, like, if I'm at home and I have, and I love bone and ribeye and I make them at home. When I made steak here, it's just, I want to freaking clean that thing. I want to be like a dog and it's just uncouth. I tend to be one of these people who doesn't really, especially in my early middle age, that doesn't give a shit what people think or what they see. Like, I'm just not as self-conscious as I used to be, but still that's one that in the wrong company just repulses people, right? Like, there are only a few people in my life, you among them, where I'd even feel comfortable in a restaurant just picking up the ribeye bone and doing that. So what I'll often do, or what I often did, take the bone home. Say it's take the bone home. And then get home and gnaw on it, right? Because I just that fat and meat that is just close to the bone is really the best stuff.
Oh, that's so funny you do that. I've never heard – that's amazing. Like, if someone offered me like oxtail but without the bone in it.
No, what do you want? Yeah, no.
Come on. Like, it's part of the whole fun is like getting that gelatin, like that fatty. It's so
right
much
in the
more
middle,
fun.
You know, in the oxtail, that little part in the middle, that little gelatinous marrow that's kind of sitting there.
Yes.
In the middle.
Once you find the glory that is marrow, when you have, you kind of ascend to a place in your life where you're like, yeah, I'm eating that marrow. And it's just the most decadent, fatty, it's butter. It's nature's butter. Yeah. And I'm like, man, how do people not eat bone or like enjoy having a big old bone from the Flintstone era on their plate? I think it's awesome. Like, if I'm Kevin, we should do a restaurant. It should be brontosaurus. It should just have dishes that you can be caveman in there. I would love to have a restaurant that has that as its theme.
You should come when you come out here. Nancy Silverton's Key Spaca is very much what you're talking about.
Get your hands dirty and let's go.
Meat. Yeah, it's meat. The one thing I really miss cooking since I went on this thing is I miss braising oxtails. First of all, it's just not that hard and it's so satisfying. You just like, and I'd braise those things for 7 hours at a low temperature. I think you've come over to my house and had my braised oxtails.
Oh yeah, I have. Yeah. I mean, it's delicious.
You get put grits under it. Like, that's one of my favorite meals to prepare, and I just obviously don't do it anymore. And also, I mean, the truth is to your point, a really good oxtail, the bone shouldn't even be an issue because it just falls off,
yeah.
Right? Like, and that's what you want. But I'm with you. I'll always take the bone. It's satisfying. Like a tomahawk pork chop. Now, that's some fun.
So much fun. So that was a little bit of a tangent because when he has to make that decision of I'm not including the bone, I'm like, ooh, that's a risk because I think people generally like to have that aspect to their dishes. So so he gets actually the W. Brian Voltaggio goes to the back room. He gets his win. That's got to be super satisfying considering how good Michael Voltaggio was that day to get the win at that stage of the game. Of course he wants to win the next challenge, the championship challenge, but man, that's got to feel really, really good for Brian Voltaggio to go into the back room and leave Michael, Kevin, and Jen to roast in front of the judges.
Yeah. I mean, and again, on a week where you know whoever's going home, like you might go home even with a great dish. I mean, that's got to be stressful is when you're not, you know, it's always a bummer not to win. Yeah, you're competitive. You want to win. But when you're down to four and you know nobody really screwed up, like if I'm Kevin, I'm terrified based on the ropiness. Like I've got to believe he must have thought that he was going home. You know, the rope Avieja doesn't really play in this particular, in this kind. It's not a Cuban, restaurant challenge, but I was really shocked. I was shocked that he didn't.
You thought he was going home. Yeah.
Well, just when they started talking about the duckiness, and I know you know exactly what they're talking about. That sort of perfect, it retains some of its gaminess. But it still just sucks. I mean, one of the things about duck breast that's because I've given up this meat, which I've now mentioned like five times in the last 10 minutes.
Enough already. You're making me feel bad.
Duck breast, I get all my steak fix. Like a really good duck breast to me is like steak. And when I do it here, that's where I get my fix. If I can eat that for a long time, I don't need to go back on steak. I mean, duck breast just is so good. And she nailed it. You know, it's your main, it's your protein. I'm not saying that Kevin should have gone home. Again, as we always say, you don't taste the food, you don't know. But she nailed the duckiness on the protein. His had a ropiness. It just, I'm shocked. I mean, that must have been really salty, that starter.
Yeah, the flake salt. I don't know that term, but apparently it's a little finicky. If I'm going to go home, Kevin, I'm going to go home for being over-seasoned, you know?
Yep.
It's like in golf, they always make sure you don't leave a putt short. And it's because you got to go for it. Got to go for it. Never leave the putt short. And so she didn't leave the putt short here. She salted it, over-seasoned apparently. But I feel like she can feel at peace with the fact that she over-seasoned a dish because I would just hate to go home because I didn't add enough salt. And I'm a guy who is eating Kalamata olives, salted Kalamata olive because I just love salty food. Like I just love salty food. I just felt bad for Jen there.
When people ask me my favorite food, I say salt.
It just is. I'll go out to dinner with some friends and they'll be like, oh, what'd you think about that dish? I'm like, oh my God, it's so good. And they're like, oh, I thought it was unbearably salty. And I'm like, oh, that's why I loved it. It was a salt bomb. And again, Kevin, you and I have very, very similar palates here because I probably would eat Jen's dish and just say that was the best dish I ate.
Closing on this, I have to ask you some advice about something that's coming up in my life that's food related. If we're done talking finale or not, I mean, let's do a little preview. Let's do a little preview. So we got Brian, Kevin, and Mike, Michael Voltaggio. What are you looking for? What are your keys to the game, Tom Haverstroh?
Keys to the game. Don't think creatively over flavor. I think he's getting a little bit inside his head about Kevin. I think Kevin in his latest dish was called a study of simplicity. And Michael Voltaggio continues to harp on the fact
he hates it. He hates it.
He thinks it's amateur hour, you know? And I think he might get over his skis a little bit, is just thinking, I got to take my food and go next level. Think like light years ahead. Think meta with my dish, because you know what? I'm going to separate myself from Kevin. I think it's the opposite. I think he almost needs to peel it back a little bit, Michael Voltaggio, because I think he's overthinking it. So if I'm going into this championship game, my scouting report on Michael Voltaggio is lean in, like egg him on with his creativity, because I think he might get a little ahead of himself.
See, I would say my concern for Kevin going, he would be the person I'm most concerned about, not because it's not going to be great, but you just know one of those other two Voltaggios are going to nail their four courses. And where I think he might get into trouble, Kevin, is they say, we love your food. It was delicious. It was homey. You did amazing things with simple ideas, but it's just not innovative enough. Right? Do they put a ceiling on Kevin? Because there isn't just that transcendent ambition that you see with a Voltaggio. And that is kind of the thing I would worry about with Kevin. They tend to reward technical cooking at the biggest moments, right? They tend, particularly Tom Colicchio, he wants to see you stretch. He will totally appreciate, as you said, the sort of brilliant simplicity for a salad, for a starter. But I think he wants you in the finest, because it's never going to hurt you, because there are always going to be errors in other play. And Kevin just executes. He just executes. But that would be my concern. Now, he has shown, it's so interesting now. One of the other pleasures of this season for me, Tom, is watching Kevin 10 years prior, right? Like what Kevin does now, when we saw in the All-Stars was, oh shit, he not only carried his like comfort food, but now he knows how he will give you the best of both worlds. He will not compromise the hominess, but he will dazzle with a little twist of innovation that he probably didn't have competently in his tool shed in this season.
Man, if I were to choose a favorite, I mean, I think you're right, is that
but we know who wins and we're just not spoiling it.
Yeah, but I'm thinking going into this blind, I think you're right, is that Kevin is so different than the other two that it almost works against him, because I think in the heart of hearts, people want to see Michael and Brian go head to head for the finale, right? And they do not similar foods, but they have a certain style to them that is different than Kevin. I think Kevin, if we're just going on flavor, he probably is going to win. But if we're going on presentation and inventiveness, like, it's probably going to be one of the other two. So if I'm going to pick based on their ability to perform at a high level, give you the best tasting food, I'm probably going to go with Kevin. But if the whole senses, all the sensory overload, you can't just be a one-tool player, I think it's Brian or Michael has to be considered the favorite going into this finale.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. So Tom, I will have to be on liquid food for about 7 to 10 days. And then for several days after that, like really soft food. I'm having this really bizarre, like palate throat surgery that is going to be miserable. It's been very interesting to sort of plan my menu. I ordered like all this bone broth from a chicken farmer in Florida.
Stock up on some bone broth.
The real fun has been, I am doing some Jell-O parfaits. Did you as a kid have the parfait, the bottom layer is pure Jell-O, the middle layer is a Jell-O Cool Whip combo, and then Cool Whip on the top so you get the three tiers? I'm doing that, and I also ordered.
Wait, you're getting it like Jell-O brand, or you're doing an elevated version? Jell-O.
No, you need stuff that slides down your throat. I mean, Jell-O, I think, from what I understand, is the least painful food. Just swallowing kills, and that means swallowing water, swallowing anything. People get readmitted after day 4 or 5 of the recovery for hydration issues. And the other thing I did is, again, because I don't allow myself to have a lot of junk over the course. Like I have, there's an ice cream place I really like in Los Angeles. Every 2 weeks we allow ourselves to go, or I allow. But I also ordered pumpkin spice jello pudding, which is very hard to find. You have to go to kind of a collector pudding site to get this.
Not these but days. There's ordered, pumpkin spice everywhere, my man.
Not, but I'll tell you, man, like go find yourself some pumpkin spice jello pudding. It's not easy. And now we're going to a kind of a superstore next Monday before I go in on Wednesday.
Superstore?
Basically a place in the burbs that doesn't exist in Los Angeles where you can just get middle to lowbrow food. Because I'm just, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it, man. I'm just going to, first of all, I'm going to lose weight so I can actually eat what I want. Like Eric's going to go out for a Shake Shack or other milkshakes for me every other day. Like I have to do, you can't just subsist on sugar because A, it's inflammatory, and B, I think even I will be like, all right, enough is enough. Give me something sort of savory, which is where the bone broth comes. But like, I'm actually fascinated to see how I handle this. Pretty much 7 to 10 days liquid only, and then 4 days like kind of like wet eggs. Speaking of wet eggs, maybe oatmeal, hummus. I don't know. Like, but this is honestly, I feel like I'm going into a Top Chef eating challenge. Like chefs, you can only make food that is essentially liquid and pudding.
It sounds pretty great. I used to do like the split. So I had like the chocolate and the vanilla jello, like mix. I don't think it works, but I don't know if you did this, Kevin. I don't think it works for you. In fact, I'm pretty sure it definitely doesn't. The goober grape.
Oh, I love goober grape.
I love goober grape.
It's going to be tough. Like, also, I have to watch like acidic food. And also I think that
tomato bisques are out, tomato anything.
I mean, what I want to do is there's this place that, you know, like Gold Belly. Have you seen Gold Belly, where all these like kind of, you know, classic, the best pizza and the best like deli food will ship anywhere. And it's like, you know, if you're kind of a, and there's this place that does like lobster bisque in Massachusetts. And I think I'm going to get like a big carton of that shipped. Because that to me would be sort of good, but it's just a weird mind fuck. Everybody says it. Like, apparently there's this point where you need cold food the first 7 days, and then it flips on you, and now the cold food kills and you have to go warm, which is just the weirdest freaking thing. There also might be hydromorphine in my future, which is very exciting.
What is that?
I mean, it's morphine. Like, and if it gets really bad,
liquid morphine.
Yeah, I guess. Like, I'm totally ignorant to this. I mean, I think I get started on Norco. You know, basic painkillers take for every 4 to 6 hours, but I don't think it's enough. Like, apparently you go harder. And so I'm wondering if I get to venture into the world of hydromorphine and Dilaudid.
Oh, Jesus. I'll just tell you, I know people who've been on Dilaudid, and it is a tough one to break. So always
be careful.
Gotta be careful on the Dilaudid.
The thing is, I don't know where I go to get it. Like, and also, I mean, I have a good surgeon. So I think like, it's a guy I can tell, like, look, man, I like the Dilaudid a little too much. Like, what do we do?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. But what is the thing that, what is the, like the bone broth that you're going for? Is beef bone broth? Is it?
No, chicken. Because I'm not doing the beef.
Oh, you're not doing that? Yeah.
Yeah. It's this place, the Circle C Farm in Florida is where I get a lot of my chicken. I get some of it from Porter and York in Washington State, which is a great farm. I recommend it because I get those airline breasts that I like. But I get a lot of my thigh meat and thighs from Circle C, this little family farm in Florida. And they've got like, they ship bone broth in the mason jar. Because one of the things is I went on Amazon, a lot of these like upscale-y, boutique-y, artisanal, like pouches of bone broth you get are expensive, man. Like they want like $16 for 16 ounces. It's like, I'm not doing that.
Give me the wholesale. Like, I don't need the boutique-y stuff. Just go to the butcher or go to the farmer and just get it wholesale.
Well, you know, our friend in Philadelphia kind of taught me to do it. I might add a little kind of go with the pho flavor profile. You know, once I get the plain chicken broth, because like, what do I do with the chicken broth once I get it? I don't know how much salt you're allowed to have, though. Like, I think, like, does salt hurt the wound? I don't know. I have to get my tonsils out as part of this thing.
So, which, yeah, isn't that a thing that kids get their tonsils taken?
Yes. There's a reason adults don't get it. It's because it's torture. And so I've been having fun feeling sorry for myself, but also sort of saying, okay, there's gallows humor. And what shit am I going to eat that I never get to eat? Pudding, milkshakes, stuff that just I stay away from just because I'm vain, essentially. And I can't metabolize it at age 47. It's just, I can't do it anymore.
All right. So we came up with the sports writer challenge. Maybe we'll see how this goes. But the Arnovitz surgery,
right?
Throat
today
surgery,
chefs. Today, chefs, we're reeling out be Kevin. Serving 15 patients who had tonsillectomy. They're all high on hydromorphine, and they can't eat solid food. Actually, this is what I'm pitching to Tom Colicchio.
This is it, man.
You have drugged out tonsillectomy patients, and that is the challenge. Okay, we've got to write Tom.
This is it.
Like, this is it. This is it.
This is it.
And then, like, you know, celeriac puree with a
So does that mean Padma, Gail, and Tom are going to be hopped up on painkillers? Just as
no,
part
I
of
think
the
you have to, like,
I mean, I guess
you have
they
to
just
let
have
the
to trust
judges.
the tonsillectomies.
Well, no, they can still judge, right? Like, they can still – it's like the stoner food truck one, right? Like, the hangover one that they did years ago. I think they can still – like, they know how to judge soup. They know how to judge purees. You know, I think essentially it's a baby food challenge. So you just get a bunch of tonsillectomy victims and just – they judge it.
This is great. Well, we can leave off on that note, but I would be remiss if we did not – mention the where are we now? Where are they now? Jen Carroll edition.
Oh,
she's been on the show a bunch of times, but just a quick
Jen Carroll,
shout out.
Where is she now? She's on Pack Your Knives, and she's doing great work. I get her updates on Patreon. I recommend you become a Jen Carroll Patreon subscriber, a patron. It's also like really useful recipes. I mean, everything from sauces to like quick fix type stuff. So I really recommend that. And, you know, she's doing great work in Philly. And go listen to some of our past episodes if you want to know where she is now.
Yeah, eatccc.com, eatccc, that's 3c's.com. And she's also got Spice Finch with her partner in Rittenhouse Square, Philadelphia. So go check it out.
We will. By the way, I'm going to read a press release that just has come over while we've been recording. Bravo Greenlight's Top Chef Amateurs, hosted by Gail Simmons. I'm going to read this out. Bravo expands the James Beard and Emmy Award-winning franchise with the Greenlight of Top Chef Amateurs, hosted by Gail Simmons, produced by Magical Elves, our favorite. There's nothing better. The only thing better than magic are elves. Bravo's newest culinary competition gives talented home cooks the opportunity of a lifetime to test their skills in the illustrious Top Chef kitchen. Unpacking their knives to step in alongside Simmons are Top Chef finalists and frontrunners Chef Eric, Richard Blaze, Jen Carroll, Speak of the Devil, Shirley Chung, Stephanie Smar. Wow. Tiffany Derry, Joe Flam will be in the building. Chef Gregory, Melissa King, current champion. Kwame, who doesn't love Kwame? Dale.
Is this side saddle to the new season of Top Chef? Because these are all contestants that I think are guest judges that are coming for that Portland season. I wonder if it's running concurrently and if you are late to the party. Kevin, we got to make this happen. You got to
on
Top
what's
Chef
going on with Portland?
Amateur.
Tell us about Portland. Wait, what's going on? Tell us what's going on in Portland. I know they named it. I don't think we've talked about it. You're saying all these chefs I just mentioned are going to be on the Top Chef Portland?
As guest judges.
That can't be. Oh, as guest judges. Okay. So, the challenges in contention are the Seven Deadly Sins Challenge, the Aphrodisiac Challenge. Eric, I might have to go out for this. I need to do more work. Like, I really need to up my game. Like, I need to spend months really digging in and getting better technically.
So there's a Stephen Curry. There's a what's it called? The Unlimited Tour or something like that, where he he goes on tour, not with like 5-star recruits. You have to be like a 1 or 2-star recruit to get entry into his camp. And this is kind of what we're talking about here, is you can't be someone who actually has worked in a restaurant before. You have to have
right. It's like the Olympics, right? Like you got to be an amateur.
Right. So
back in the day.
So yeah, this, you know, we got to make it happen, Kevin.
All right. I'm going to think long and hard about this. I think I might want to do this. Tom, the thing here is I get really self-conscious. I don't know that, like, no, and also those quick fires. I mean, I'm not the quickest chef yet.
You know,
although I did make dinner in an hour the other night, like from scratch. And that was in fact, I mentioned it to Eric. I made homemade Kung Pao chicken and the Asian kale, we call it, like Lasaki mirin and shallots, and then kind of let them, evaporate off. But yeah, I mean,
Kevin, right, you just need to know a few general plays, X's and O's, and then riff. You just need some standbys that you can go in and know, all right, I've got 8 dishes in my head. I can do some spins off of one of these dishes, no matter what they throw at me. And that way, you're not having to reinvent the wheel every single time. You just have to have 8 reliable old standbys. And then,
well, I think also knowing your techniques, right? Like if you can pan sear fish, right? Like if you know how to do some sauces with ingredients that are thrown at you, right? Like I also think I'm with you. Like you got to have those back pockets. But then I think you also know how to, like, what is the method, right? I can do fish 3 ways. I can braise meat. I know how to grill it. Like I'm shitty at grilling fish. I never get it right.
Well, then don't do it. We're going to have to talk to magical elves here. See if we can patch it through.
All right. I'm still thinking about it. I think it is terrifying to be on TV as a contestant. I mean, I don't, you know.
Do you hear yourself? I've never heard you so gleeful until you found out about this. Don't forget.
I know, but I'm having like real. All right. To be continued. Let me sleep on it. We're going to record our finale before my surgery. So, we will continue. I want to think it over for 48 hours, Tom, okay, between this taping and the next.
Okay, let's do it.
All right. For Tom Havistrow, this is Kevin Arnovitz, and this is Pack Your Knives.